Welcome to Your Odyssey Podcast, where your guides, Tara and Karen, invite you on a transformative journey toward wholeness and personal growth. Each week, we'll discuss topics related to the human experience and offer insights to help you along the way. Please note, this podcast should not replace medical care or advice. We are not licensed healthcare professionals or mental health therapists. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe so you don't miss out on our future discussions. So, explorers, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, explorers, to today's episode honoring ADHD Awareness Month.
What's that? Wait, what'd you say? I was looking at something else.
Yes. Whether you're personally affected by ADHD or simply interested in learning more, this episode is for you. Looks directly at Karen.
I wrote the book on it.
Yes. We're here to foster understanding, offer support, and shed light on the crucial role of advocacy in raising awareness about ADHD. Get ready for an eye-opening journey as we navigate the dimensions of ADHD. Let's get started.
I am so excited about this episode because there's so many things that I want to say about ADHD, and I know we're going to get to it all, but I really want to acknowledge that ADHD is not a negative thing. Mm-hmm. It's a diagnosis. However, every person that I know with fairly solid ADHD is pretty dang creative. And there's so many, you know, inventors and creators and artists and musicians that are ADHD. And it really lends itself to this beautiful dance of creativity. So if you are out there thinking, I have ADHD and it's a drag and I don't know how to deal with it, open up to the possibility that it's a super beautiful gift and that you are just learning about your creativity.
I love that. I didn't even think to look up artists, creators, creatives who have this diagnosis. That
so many.
I'm going to do that after we finish recording for
sure. We will add that to the resources because it's so interesting. Yes.
Okay. ADHD Awareness Month began in 2004 as a collaboration of multiple organizations such as CHAD, Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, and Attitude Magazine, in partnership with the U.S. government. Since 2004, it has grown into an international movement with organizations and individuals worldwide joining forces to spread awareness, advocate for better understanding and support, and reduce the stigma associated with ADHD.
As I was saying, there's so many actual benefits and so much beauty that comes with a person who is sort of thinking outside the box or who's highly creative or highly productive. And I just have to stop and pause and say, that was Attitude Magazine, ADDitude. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that at first. And I think that's brilliant.
Attitude.
Yes. There's so much we're going to talk about.
There's so much. The 2024 ADHD Awareness Month theme is Awareness is Key. This theme underscores the significance of education, empathy, and support for individuals with ADHD. That's it. Awareness is key.
We talk about awareness in terms of self-awareness, self-advocacy, mm-hmm. being aware of feelings in your body, where you feel it, what it might be triggering. I literally gave a talk 2 years ago called Awareness is Key. It wasn't talking about ADHD, but it was talking about knowing when you feel stress or discomfort in your body, keying into that mm-hmm. and trying to understand what that's about, giving yourself space to process and take care of yourself.
Awareness is key.
Yeah. Yes, I love the word. Okay.
According,
I could go off on four different things right
it's
now.
It's okay. I'm gonna try to keep her. I'm gonna try to keep her in the box. But even though I don't like the term like inside the box because I hate boxes.
You don't even like box. It's like
that?
Circles.
Move.
It's not boxes
okay.
with you. But
so we're gonna try.
Yeah.
According to epidemiological data,
When I tell you how many times I practiced that word,
that
to
is
make sure.
That was so smooth. I was like, epidemiological. Yo.
Approximately 5% of adults have ADHD.
Is it only 5%?
In the U.S., that represents 11 million people.
Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But I still can't believe it's only 5%. I would have said 20. I am not joking. I would have solidly been like, oh yeah, we 20% ADD for sure.
No.
Wow. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to feel like my people are a bigger group.
There are 10,999,999 other people.
My
right
friends.
There with you.
Yeah. And that's just diagnosed though.
Sure. That,
yeah. Because I'm pretty sure there's
right
a lot of us walking around undiagnosed. You know who you are,
right.
My people.
Before we dive into a couple of myths to bust and support and strategies, I wanted us to get in my little time machine and stop at three pivotal points in ADHD Awareness Month timeline. Not even the month, it's just ADHD.
Okay, got it. Not the history of the actual Awareness Month, but ADHD itself. Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
All right. The first description of ADHD was in 1902.
1902.
Yes. British pediatrician Sir George Still's groundbreaking work in 1902 laid the foundation for our understanding of ADHD. Remember, it's 1902, so don't get distracted when you hear his description of the condition.
Oh, boy. George. Okay, Dr. George.
It's 1902. It's okay. We just come, you know, turn of the century. We still knew it is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We didn't quite say everything as well as we could. His description of the condition is as follows.
I know I'm going to laugh.
A defect of moral control.
Come on now, George. Okay, sorry. I'm
like, it's like that. Like, I am not diagnosed, but I feel some type of way.
Like, that's like a defect of moral control. I beg your pardon.
His description was the first step in recognizing and studying what we now know as ADHD. His work, which was based on his observations of children with impulsive behavior and poor attention span, had a significant impact on the field of pediatric neurology and has contributed to advancements in understanding and treating ADHD.
Now, did you say neural or moral control?
Moral.
See, I thought that's the word you used because it has nothing to do with morals. But if he said neural, I'd be like, oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like the nervous system is way hot.
Sir George did the best he could.
He did the best he could.
In 1980, we get to an official diagnosis of ADHD.
Only 78 years later.
We slow. We talked about how slow we are. So in 1980, the American Psychiatric Association's DSM, so the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, included ADHD as an official diagnosis, marking a significant milestone in our understanding of ADHD within psychiatry and psychology.
Psychiatry and psychology. Okay. They were recognizing this is an issue.
Sir
we
George
need to put
was
it
on
in the
to something yeah. a while ago.
Okay.
Then from 1980, we move into the early 2000s when we get an update to the DSM. This update detailed three subtypes of ADHD: inattentive, hyperactive, impulsive, and combined. And then I was like, it's three subtypes? Let me dive into that a little bit, because just to continue with the threes, why not?
Mm-hmm.
The inattentive subtype is characterized by difficulty sustaining attention, being easily distracted, and appearing not to listen when spoken to.
What's that now?
Exactly.
Mm.
The hyperactive impulsive subtype, which is probably the one that most of us associate with ADD or ADHD,
agreed.
Involves fidgeting, tapping, or talking excessively and difficulty waiting for turns and interrupting others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that type's on top of the beat for sure.
Right.
It's like, oh, slow down.
The combined subtype includes symptoms from both the inattentive and hyperactive impulsive subtypes. Having specific subtypes helps us to better understand and diagnose ADHD. I also want to tell explorers that symptoms and presentation can change over time.
And also, I want to point out that you know, similar to autism, ADD, ADHD is a spectrum. Yeah, so you've got some minor inattention to all the way up to, holy smokes, we need some medication over here to help calm the nervous system down, and anything in between. And there's so many different colors and ways that it presents in all different people. I think it's important to note that it's a spectrum. I hear so many people lately saying, because of the rise of technology and how it's taken over our lives and our brains and our focus, is that basically everybody has ADHD on some level these days. And that's kind of what it feels like, although the numbers don't lie. So,
ooh, okay. So I like how you set us up here. Let's bust some myths. The first myth being that everyone has a little ADHD. I know I've used terminology like that before, but in a cheeky way, not in a way that I believe that everybody has ADHD. I believe everybody has the capacity to think outside of the box.
Everybody is creative.
Everybody is creative.
But not everybody has trouble focusing, you know.
So the myth of everyone has a little ADHD. Fact is, everyone does not have a physical difference in their brain. As much as we would all love to be neurospicy, that's not the case.
Neurospicy. I'm neurospicy. I love that. I'm using that forever. I'm neurospicy. I'm different. And I like it. I'm not going to apologize. But it, I tell you what, it has made living in a traditional, normative. Yes, exactly. Culture. There's been many years where I've been like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do what A, B, C, what they all do? And I would compare myself constantly. And now that I have the official diagnosis, I'm like, oh, this explains so much. This explains so much. Yeah, for sure.
When we use statements like that, we are not acknowledging the real struggles of individuals with ADHD.
I mean, it's a literal brain differential. Like, your wiring is different. It's unique, my friends. It is not the norm.
It's ADHD is rooted in neurological differences, and it is a brain-based chronic condition that affects self-regulatory functions.
Yep, that feels about right.
It's your brain.
Yeah.
Not exactly fitting into the societal mold of normal. I hate that, another word.
But it's not an emotional or I don't consider a mental health condition. It's a physical condition, like you'd be prone to heart disease or high blood pressure or genetically inclined towards a particular type of cancer. I've read that ADHD and ADD are genetic.
Yep, genetic component.
There's a genetic component. And so, you know, if one or both of your parents had a little bit of this,
a little spicy,
they're spicy, then you're extra spicy.
Yes.
Love it.
Remembering that ADHD is a neurological difference in their brain allows those of us without this neurological difference to have empathy. Yes, everyone experiences forgetfulness or distraction, but again, back to the U.S., 95% of us don't have it.
And that really, you know, when you don't know that you have it and you're trying to figure out why you don't maybe focus or reach goals or are quote unquote successful in certain ways as other people, you got some special wiring, you know, some wires across. All my life I've known, like, my neurological system is different. I've always known that, but I never connected that. I always connected that to my sensitivity, being a highly sensitive person.
HSPs, not, let's go.
Exactly. Like, not like my empathy and my sensitivity, but not to, oh, this is how your brain is wired. And so this is actually how you think and function and roll, is how you roll.
Right. Let's bust another myth.
Okay.
ADHD is just an excuse for laziness.
What? Who says that? Who even says that? I've never seen one ADHD, ADD person with that seemed lazy. In fact, they are like nonstop, in my opinion. I'm always like, which path are you going down? Like, 10 things at once.
Everywhere. Well, people with ADHD can be lazy from time to time, just like anyone else. But that is not the explanation for their symptoms. They may be able to focus on activities they enjoy, but struggle with tasks like schoolwork or job responsibilities. Remember, ADHD is a result of chemical dynamics in the brain.
We look at things differently, and I do think that on some level because certain straight ahead subject matter doesn't appeal to kids, students, whatever, even in college. It's not that we don't like it. It's that we have a hard time focusing perhaps on that particular thing. And therefore, we're not successful at it. But it's a combination of like of desire and mm-hmm. also of like of that wiring.
Yes, definitely on the wiring. So topics or tasks that strongly interest our friends tend to bring intensified motivation, while tasks that they find less interesting result in weaker neural messages. It's the brain.
It's saying that doesn't interest me, so I'm not going to do it.
So it could be sports, it could be arts, it could be music, it could be whatever the task is. That's where the stronger neural message is, which leads to increased motivation.
That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. If you see that and you desire that and you like that, let's do that.
Let's do more of that. Feels, I mean, that in general, that feels, isn't that how brains work?
No, that kind of feels pretty normal.
And the final myth that I want to bust is only boys or males have ADHD.
Oh, hell no.
Neil. If we go back to Sir George in 1902, the subjects he studied and for most of history have been predominantly white, hyperactive school-age boys.
Oh, well, goodness. Doesn't that skew the data?
No, of course not. Why would it do that?
Oh, my goodness. Because that's who was causing trouble, so that's who we're going to look at.
Oh, not even that's who was causing trouble, is that's who we're going to look at.
That's who we're looking at.
Because this group of people was the group that was predominantly studied, it led to underdiagnosis and lack of proper treatment for girls and women with ADHD. Remember, not too long ago, we have now three subtypes for ADHD, and this was only focused on one of those subtypes. Boys are diagnosed 2 to 3 times as often as girls, but about 4.2% of girls have received a diagnosis of ADHD at some point in their life. That's just the ones with a diagnosis.
And how many boys?
I don't know.
Did it say? Okay.
2 to 3 times as often they're diagnosed.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, okay. And are they diagnosed with a subtype of hyperactive impulsive?
Is that who the boys?
Yeah, the boys.
Yeah,
I'm just curious if that's what stands out. You know, it well. This is cultural as well with women. Women being overlooked, shocking. And it's something I do know that the numbers are staggering. Like how many women in their 40s and 50s are being
just
diagnosed
now.
Just now, understanding because culture dictates women to be sort of quiet and to be nurturing and to do this and to have expectations. And so if we're not like out loud ADD, then it's just going to go under the radar. Women and girls not being diagnosed. It's changing now. The tide is turning. Yeah. There are amazing TED Talks by women with ADD that are really fun, great to listen to, and really validating.
I think I sent you guys one of them like not too long ago, or it could have been a long time ago. I don't know. It's within the past year.
Yeah.
So girls and women are less likely to be properly diagnosed and are more likely to present with inattentive presentation of the condition. Women and girls with ADHD have a higher incidence of depression and anxiety, and many are initially referred for treatment due to symptoms of anxiety and depression, while the symptoms of ADHD are missed.
Yeah, because we don't know what's wrong with us, and we're struggling with, why can't I be like that? Why can't I do that? Why am I this way? A diagnosis doesn't change the facts, but it sure is validating. And it helps you understand yourself a little bit better so that you can then look into, you know, what are the things that can support me? What are the resources? What do I need my people to do to help me with this, to help me focus or be more attentive? Like, can I be standing up and walking around while I'm talking? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've always wondered why I enjoy conversations more if I'm moving, like if we're taking a walk. It feels like I can pay attention better. So that makes sense.
Complex and nuanced factors influence the female experience of ADHD, including but not limited to fluctuating estrogen levels.
Yay! Awesome! Hormones! Yay!
And, as Karen alluded to, gendered expectations of behavior.
We are, but it's, you know...
But, yeah, gendered expectations.
100%. 100%.
So you mentioned support in your people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's discuss a few ADHD support and strategies.
Love
starting
it.
With
love it.
Your support network. Now I'm going to feel like I'm interviewing you. So Karen, tell me, how important is your support network, be it the people in your community? How important are they for you, especially as it relates to this diagnosis?
Well, I will say super important. And my inner circle understands this about me. But I will guarantee you that anybody outside of that maybe has no idea.
Mm.
It's not that I am afraid or embarrassed to share this information, but maybe I only trust certain people with this information, or maybe it's hard for me to have input from a lot of people.
Ooh, yeah.
About it, because there are so many falsehoods about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just learning about it myself and learning how to manage it.
Ooh.
Apparently I'm great at masking. Ooh. And I'm great at overcoming or overcompensating in other ways.
Wow.
So that's a thing.
I wrote that support networks can help individuals with ADHD feel less isolated, provide strategies for managing symptoms or living with symptoms, and offer encouragement during difficult times.
That's all lovely. That's the hope. That's the ideal.
Which, me, why you wouldn't just, you know, shout it from the ADHD mountaintop.
Mm.
Not everybody is safe. Not everybody has the awareness or the education to support you well.
Right. Right. Sometimes they don't even know what it means, or they feel like, well, I don't know what to do with that. So, you know, that's a disconnect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Interesting.
Okay. Another support strategy.
That's a great thing for me to think about and look at. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another support strategy would be therapy. I love me some CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which can help everybody and individuals with ADHD address specific challenges such as time management, impulse control, and emotional regulation.
Time management.
What is time?
Well, first of all, time's whack. Second of all, time doesn't really exist. Third of all, time is sometimes like a person with ADHD's like nemesis.
Mm.
Like it's just time either for me either goes like super fast relative to what I'm doing, or I don't notice it at all. Mm. It's weird.
Yeah.
And I think too, when you have ADHD, the kind where you can hyper focus on something, hours can go by.
Time does not exist,
really. Yeah, hours go by and it feels like 5 minutes. So you wonder why I'm like, why am I stiff in this chair?
Because I've been sitting here for 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what is happening? Yeah.
Therapy can also help individuals address any coexisting conditions such as anxiety or depression. Therapy can be an important component of a comprehensive treatment plan for individuals, offering them support and skills they need to thrive. I don't want people just to exist and just
be getting by.
Right.
Right. You want them to be thriving, managing this and thriving. And I think some of the awareness that's occurring is hopefully going to seep into our culture to allow a little more space for this neurodiversity. I think that's been happening, but it's a slow go.
And Karen, as always, leads to our next support strategy, which is accommodations. Accommodations in various settings such as school or workplace, including extended time for tasks or tests, or preferential seating to minimize distractions, and breaking tasks into smaller, more manageable steps. I love breaking a big task into smaller, more manageable steps. So I could only imagine if I were a little neurospicy and could more easily be pulled in a million different directions.
You have firsthand witnessed me saying the words, this is what I want to do, and I don't know where to start. Like, have no idea. Like, I have so many ideas and so many big thoughts, and then I get
it's too much
paralysis, like analysis paralysis. Like, I just can't. I'm just like, ah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's when I go to you and my inner support system,
like,
and be like,
hey,
can you help me break this down? What do I need to do? I literally have post-it notes from that meeting where you were like, this is what you do first. And then this is what you do second.
Yes. I've also noticed some parents of children with this diagnosis you know how like we can rattle off, I need you to do 1, 2, and 3. Maybe I only got the 3 because 1 and 2, they left. They're gone. Like when you said them,
whatever the last thing you said,
that's
was,
what I'm gonna do. And then like the parents would get so frustrated. It's like, I told you to do 1, 2, and 3. I don't remember. I would have had I
had I actually processed had that. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a strategy that, especially as children get older, is to provide them written as well as verbal instructions.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'd love to check something off. It's like, okay,
oh, yeah.
1, 2, and 3. These are the things that you need to do, let's say, when you get home from school.
Yes.
I don't care what order you do them in, but by the time I get home or by 8 p.m., these things need to be done.
Yes. And I, it's funny. I've always said I'm a visual learner. I do love looking at a list, a task list. And I will say that that theory proves out with my son when I say, can you do this and this? And it's funny because here I am knowing what I can and cannot process and expecting like, well, maybe he'll catch all this. First of all, you know, he's in puberty and his ears don't even work right. You know, and there's so much going on physiologically and neurologically for him already. I find it so much easier to either text him or leave him a note on the table and be like, these things. And I still need to remind him or say, like on my way home, say, have you done the things? Oh, no, I'll do that right now.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Another accommodation would be to allow the use of noise-canceling headphones.
I noise-cancel my entire life.
Nothing makes a sound. I'm about to go onto the Attitude magazine site and see if I can get what? Because all of these things sound amazing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Just in my day-to-day life, I'm like, this is great. I think all of us can benefit from some of these accommodations. And then the last accommodation would be to offer frequent breaks to help manage restlessness. Could you imagine?
Yes.
Being forced to sit. I'm asking you, could you imagine?
I'm like,
could you imagine?
Oh, but yes, I can.
Being forced to sit through, especially for a task that your neural connection is not as strong.
Yes.
Oh, and sit there.
It's primal torture.
It's like
it's torturous.
It's like a tax advice class. I don't know.
Oh,
something
God.
Just
poke me in the eye with a pencil.
And not being allowed to take breaks for this fundamental thing that you need to know for whatever. That does sound like torture. Like that just does not sound like it feels good at all whatsoever.
You know, this feels like such validation of things like that, that I feel like, God, how did I miss that? How does everybody else know how to budget and take care of their finances? And I'm like, month to month, like, ooh, what?
Money dollars?
Money stay? Money
no,
go?
Money go.
Yeah, there's just so many like just life skills that I feel that I think neurotypical people may learn and maybe take for granted that other people know how to do. And so maybe therefore that's why I wasn't even taught it or I didn't understand it when I was taught it. It just enlightens so much. It enlightens so much for me. And honestly, at the end of the day, it helps me. And especially in this conversation, it reminds me to cut myself a break because things are just working different.
Personally, have you gotten the budget thing figured out? Because if not, I got some resources for you.
Great. I'll take them. I'm still working
on
it.
I feel about a tool and resource. I love tools and resources in general. So there's
I'm way better than I used to be, but I'll take it. I'll take all the tools and resources. I've taken courses.
That sounds boring.
Yeah. It was a digital course, self-paced. And it was empowering, you know. And still I struggle. And still I struggle.
I'm like, what if you designed a digital course for the blah, blah stuff from a neurospicy perspective?
Ooh.
Right?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
This is recorded. So we just like that. That would be amazing. Okay.
I love that.
I've given you a task. I've tasked you with something to look.
So many tests already.
I'm
I'm like, I come here, I'm like, Tara, I didn't get to blankety blank.
It's okay.
She's so patient with me.
It's okay. Accommodations in the workplace include flexible work schedules. My sister over here, she got one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly defined job responsibilities.
Oh, and can I just tell you, because I started this new job in April, I put on my,
Oh, I remember when you requested.
I am officially diagnosed, and I'm going to need to walk around a little bit, and I'm going to need someone to help me set out the steps, and I'm going to be held accountable, and I'm going to need to talk about it a lot. And you're going to need to keep me focused otherwise.
Yes. So, and then also the option for remote work when possible.
Yes.
I really, when I was doing this, I didn't think about that you did all of these things when you advocated for yourself for this new position.
Mm.
You, all of it.
Yeah.
You did it.
Yeah, it's true. Well, because I was like, I want to be successful and I know I can do really well. I know I can do a good job for these people, but I know how I'm wired and I've been working for myself for 5 years. And so I need them to understand mm-hmm. as sort of my inner professional circle. Like I need you to understand these are the things I need.
These right.
These, this is the help that I need. This is the support I need.
Yeah. I've heard someone when you said about, I will talk about someone said like, I'm an external processor. Like I will have all of these ideas and I just need to, they just need to get out. And then if you have people personally or professionally that can pinpoint what, you know, that's never going to happen. Like that, I don't know what planet, but that one right there, that's beautiful. Not possible here. Maybe you in the future, but right now we can't do that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
But like to be an external processor and have those safe spaces, the people that can lovingly guide you with grace and kindness.
Mm.
Whew.
Boy, what a gift that is. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, part of this journey has been understanding it myself and learning to ask for what I need, learning to ask for the support.
Say
right?
It again.
The conditions.
Tell the people what you yeah. what you've learned.
So what I've learned is it's really important to acknowledge and appreciate this neurodiverse way that you have about you. And to understand and ask for the help and the support that you need in whatever conditions you're in, personal, professional, relationship,
yeah.
whatever it is, be clear about, I am most successful when, and then define those things.
You better be supported.
Mm.
All right. Mm-mm. I love it. That's all I wanted to say. That was a beautiful reminder for how just being aware can change things for someone.
Mm. Yes. If you are looking around, if you're on your life journey and you're looking around and you're feeling like, what the hell's wrong with me?
Mm.
Like if that thought has ever occurred to you, you may want to consider that you are not wired like the other 95% of the population. It's not a bad thing. It's not a judgment.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. It is. It's a gift, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we need to learn how to live with it, be with it, process it, work differently than other people. Yeah. And the more information you have, the more education, the more awareness, the better off you will be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm. Is it time?
It's time.
Whoop, whoop.
For our song for this episode.
Yay, we're going to dance it out.
Go ahead and introduce it.
Okay. when Tara told me the song she came up, like sometimes we'll have two or three songs and we kind of talk about it and work through, we listen, we're like, oh, this one, no, not this one. There is only one song. And when Tara said, I was like, oh yeah, that's the one. That's the one it's the ADD, ADHD anthem. This song is called Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake. Let's dance it out.
Check out this week's song on the Yo Podcast playlist on Spotify.
That was literally the perfect song. And the reason I say that is because I know that you have always known the magic of getting into your body in terms of processing emotions and kind of just flowing your energy and getting in a place, positive space. With ADD, moving the body just helps you calm the nervous system or just kind of switch gears. It's like a nice complement to helping your brain, I guess, maybe focus or slow down. At least that's how it affects me.
I love everything about dancing to that song just now.
Oh, oh, so good.
Okay. Mm. We chatted a little bit. We danced a little bit. Now it's time for today's question of the day.
QOTD.
In what ways can media and entertainment contribute to reducing the stigma around ADHD?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is like personalities, influencers, people who are out there in the media that have this diagnosis can speak about it, can talk about it, can talk about what works for them, can talk about why it's a blessing, not a curse. Yeah.
I also thought of TV shows or things like that, making sure that we're not being stereotypical when we are creating these characters, but portraying them accurately and diversely.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like if there were portrayals of women presenting with ADHD,
yes,
we as a people would better recognize and empathize with that. Oh, she's just sad, or oh, she's just anxious, or oh, she's... Oh, no, actually.
Actually, there's something physiologically, chemically happening
actually,
that's different than you.
Actually.
Yes.
And those portrayals, be it fictionally, or as you said, people with actual diagnoses, mm-hmm, can help build public understanding and empathy. And y'all know how we feel about empathy.
Mm-hmm. And understanding. Compassion, grace, awareness, all of it. Yes, please.
So back to the 2024 theme of awareness is key. Having these portrayals and these voices normalize the conversations.
Yes, because if you think about it, the numbers, if there's 95% of the population that do not process this way, that are neurotypical, how often are they going to encounter somebody?
Right.
Right? That has this to even know or understand or be aware, like, oh, that person just thinks differently. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I get it. Mm-hmm. There's not as many opportunities, is my point.
Yeah.
So people who are out in the public eye can be that opportunity for someone who's never encountered someone like that.
I think to back from when I was probably in like middle school and high school. So before there were the three subtypes officially defined in the DSM, like it seemed like at that time, everybody, and by everybody, I mean Sir George's
boys.
White hyperactive
but,
boys.
Yeah,
like
yeah. All
of
white
them
hyperactive boys
were diagnosed as having ADD at the time. And then it was like, oh, we just give them some Ritalin. But then they did not really have, as life, like, oh, there were other things going on neurologically or maybe at home that was presenting in this way.
Right. And also, and I think even before, I guess before the 80s, these boys, because that's really
that's
all who was diagnosed,
was. Right.
Were just called like hyperactive.
Yeah.
Like they
it.
Just like, they can't
it's got
sit
a lot
still.
Of energy.
They get a lot of energy. And it's just, that's not even scraping the surface.
That's just barely the tip of the iceberg. I mean, okay. After our question of the day, there's a quote that I find.
You know how we do.
This quote is, you're going to be like, what? He said that? And you're going to be like, that's what he said? Here we go.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Today's quote is from Jimmy Dean.
Jimmy Dean, the sausage guy?
Girl, he don't just make
What? Really?
What? Officially, Jimmy Dean was a country singer and actor who also makes delicious
That
Jimmy
I knew
Dean.
That.
I didn't either.
I did not know that.
Right.
Oh, bless his
country
sausage singer. Heart.
Did you know he sang songs?
I did not know he
After
sang
this,
songs.
After this, we're going to listen. We're going to find a Jimmy
we're gonna
Dean
pull
country
up a song. Yeah. Did he sing to the pigs? What was he? Who was he singing to?
I don't
to?
Even know
like,
what the food
the radio?
Had to do. I don't know what the sausage had to do with anything.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
okay, so.
Jimmy Dean. Really? I mean, it sounds like a country artist, if I'm being completely honest.
Jimmy Dean, get in this house. Jimmy Dean, you put that guitar down. Get over here.
Okay, sorry, y'all.
Oh, my y'all. God. Oh, wow.
Today's quote is from Jimmy Dean.
Jimmy Dean.
Son of a singer and actor.
And sausage maker.
I don't like that. I don't like that you said it that way.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, that wasn't, that didn't feel good.
No, breakfast man.
Breakfast meat man.
You made it worse. Okay, today's quote. I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination.
Oh, gosh. I love that quote. I can't believe he said that. I've heard that quote before. I would not have said that was Jimmy Dean. Wow. It's so true.
So right? It's not about fitting in or trying to stuff yourself inside that box.
It's about changing the course, changing how you approach things so that you still
always
get where
reach your destination.
Yes, you still get where you're going, where you want to go,
that
your
Breakfast
goals.
Country man singer actor. he said some that Jimmy Dean. Well,
I mean,
done.
Just for that. Kudos, Jimmy Dean.
Well done.
Like, thank you for that.
For the quote and your sausage and
and all the things.
And all the things.
And we are going to listen to you, sir.
Yes. As we wrap up today's episode, we want to remind explorers that awareness is key. By increasing understanding, empathy, and support for individuals with ADHD, we can reduce stigma and encourage early detection and intervention. Join us in advocating for better understanding and resources for those affected by ADHD. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to continuing this journey with you. Stay informed, stay supportive, and let's work together to promote awareness and understanding.
I love that. That was a beautiful ending. We're so glad you could join us today, explorers. We love you so much. Take good care. Thank you to Queenie's in downtown Durham for the use of their community podcast studio and for welcoming us so warmly each week. We'd like to give a shout out to Coco Cinnamon, the birthplace of 1023 Media and the Yo Podcast. Please support your local, women-owned, minority-owned coffee shop in downtown Durham. Brought to you by Durham-based 1023 Media, a heart-centered, woman-owned multimedia company.